You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast. Welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Guys, we're going to do something a little different this episode. I usually have a guest, whether it be a local manager, player, or personality from the community. I've also reached out all across the country this offseason. We've spoken to Dion in Detroit, John in New York, Steve, I guess he's in Cincinnati right now, but he used to be in Atlanta. And we've really kind of explored the landscape of the lower league soccer world that Asheville City exists in. But as the preseason's kicking off and as players are coming back home, as Mick starts to gear up, as Lisa Marie starts to gear up, and as Memorial starts to be prepared for first kickoff, which is looking like the end of April, I believe, I thought we might kind of take a look back real quick and see everything that happened during this offseason a little bit closer to home and how it's going to directly impact and affect Asheville. So we're going to do this in a couple different stages. The second stage is going to be very Asheville specific. We're not actually going to talk too much about the on-pitch product. There's several things that haven't happened yet. We haven't had any players announced yet. We haven't had the kit reveal. Lots of different things haven't happened. So we're going to talk about the things that have happened up to about this point, and then maybe the things that we kind of are forecasting are going to happen in the next week or two. But first, let's kind of see what happened to our neighbors, what happened to all the other teams in our both of our leagues. And I need to put the qualifier on at least this first episode that I have zero to none information on what is happening with the WPSL. The league has not come forth and announced much other than, and I found this out through kind of a side source, that the finals will actually be in Oklahoma again. They won't be in, I think they were in Oklahoma City last year, but they'll actually be in Stillwater this year, or maybe it's vice versa. But again, that's going to be at the end of July. It's going to be hot. I hope they make that game at the end of the day as opposed to the middle of the day. Other than that, the only thing that I know we can put out there is that the women have actually picked up a few more teams into their division, and the Charlotte Eagles, Wake FC, and I believe one or two others. And so now the Carolina Conference is actually going to be split in half. It's going to be two five-team divisions, and then you will play each of the other four teams home and away. Our four teams that we play will be the Discoveries, the Charlotte Eagles, Beaufort County, and the Charleston Fleet. That's a little bit different than last year. It doesn't sound like we're going to be playing the Carolina Dynamo, Oak City, and some of those other Eastern Carolina teams. It looks like we're kind of on this I-26 and Charlotte jaunt for the course of this season. And as you did hear me mention earlier, Lisa Marie Woods was named the manager of this upcoming season. She'll take over for Stacey Enos. Lydia Vandenberg, Stacey Enos, and Megan Burke are still all owners. They're extremely excited. I just saw them at the women's tryout last weekend, and they are dedicated. They are excited for this season. That flame under their butt has just been lit anew, and now I think that they fully comprehend the sandbox that they are playing in. I think they are going to be able to move their chess pieces around a little bit better while everybody else is playing checkers. No real updates from the roster per se. I did see a couple friendly faces and familiar faces out at the women's tryout. I think I saw about six returners from last year. And then just a bunch of fresh faces. There were young ladies from Eastern Tennessee, Southern Virginia, Northern Georgia, South Carolina, and even a few further away. I can't really say too much about that, but it was phenomenal to see the talent that was out there at that women's tryout. Now for the men, at the end of this interview, or at the end of this podcast, should I say, you'll hear me briefly speak to Coach Mick, who is returning after last season's playoff run and the men's first playoff victory. I got to chat with him for about 4.5 minutes at the men's open tryout. That was, I think, 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, maybe at this point. And he wasn't able to tell me much. I'm still waiting on some announcements, but he was able to describe a little bit about the academy that you may have heard something about, but we'll get into that a little bit at the end. But so we do know a little bit more about the men and, again, the conference and division that they are playing in. So, again, guys, the men do play in the NPSL Southeast Division. And first and foremost, it is now a 7-team division. So from the first year to the second year, there actually was a pretty large amount of change. Memphis dropped out. There was a team in Fort Mill that actually I think was closely related to Charlotte, but they're actually located in Fort Mill, and they fell out. I think they both dropped into maybe the UPSL or the PDL, one or the other. And things got changed into the 8-team division that we were in last year. Well, Knoxville, the Emerald Force of last year, has decided to withdraw from the NPSL, withdraw their men's team. I believe they also withdrew their women's team, which is extremely disappointing because they have been kind of a force in the WPSL over there in Knoxville. Our own Molly Dwyer from last year actually played for the Emerald Forces women's team a couple of years ago before she came to Asheville. But they have decided to focus more on their youth program, which probably fits their facilities a little bit better. So our division has shrunk down to 7 teams. It remains InterNashville, Atlanta SC, Chattanooga FC, New Orleans, Asheville, Georgia Revolution, and Greenville FC. And even within those 7, there has been a little bit of shifting and changing. So we're going to kind of touch base with each one of those clubs. Again, some have more palpable changes and some were kind of just cosmetic. But one by one, InterNashville, they are going into their 3rd year as a club. Their inaugural year in 2017, they actually won the Southeast, which I guess I had forgotten about, but in doing a little bit of research, that kind of refreshed my memory and that kind of all came rushing back. They have had a slight change in management. Richard Askey, who had previously been their manager, has now become their general manager and director of soccer operations, while Alan O'Connor has stepped up and become the first team head coach. The Dublin native has had pretty decorated playing career. He spent some time in Ireland, spent some time in the NAIA, PDL, and then actually played for Nashville FC for a bit. Alan is going to be joined by Rafa Mendina, who actually used to play for Chivas, in addition to actually playing for in and around Nashville for a long period of time. They had their open tryouts back in December on the 1st and 2nd, and their last Twitter post was actually the same amount of time, whereas their Facebook post, which they seem to be a little bit more up to date with, actually recently has been promoting Nashville SC. And if you remember last year, Nashville and InterNashville had the incident right before we went to visit them away. It was literally the morning of, where Nashville SC, who is ascending actually to the MLS here pretty soon from being a USL club, they actually loaned 4 of their players that they weren't playing that often that were sitting on the bench, loaned them down into InterNashville. And because they were professional players, InterNashville had to let go, I think, upwards of 15 different college players to accommodate these 4 professional players, several of who played that game against us and kind of put it to us. I believe we lost that game 5-1. So it's interesting that they continue to have this relationship, even to the point of InterNashville promoting them on their social media. So one of our friends in the Southeast Division has been the Atlanta Silverbacks, who, if a podcast ago, you listened to me talk to Steve Bailey, who was part of their Ultra fan base and does a lot with curating content and creating content for Non-League America. He kind of described some of the trials and tribulations that the Silverbacks have gone through, and specifically some of the internal conflict that that club had had in terms of literally leasing the name Atlanta Silverbacks from their owner, Boris. Well, that all kind of finally came to a head, and the Atlanta Silverbacks are no longer the Atlanta Silverbacks. There does still exist Silverback Park, which I would assume will continue to host the youth leagues and the Ultimate Frisbee and all of the ridiculousness that Boris continued to place in front of the Silverbacks, the NPSL side, I mean. And the club itself has moved north. It has moved to Alpharetta. It is now known as Atlanta Soccer Club, Atlanta SC. And not long after they made that move, their owner came out and said, after 3 years managing and coaching Atlanta's NPSL team, a decision has been made to part ways with Atlanta Silverback Park, an organization. We are grateful for our time with the Silverbacks and are very excited about our new direction. We will continue to be a key player in the development of soccer in the best soccer city in the U.S. In addition to this rebranding, they have also developed a new logo. It looks like it was created on Snapchat by a teenager. It is a peach on top of a soccer ball. The less said about it, the better. Roberto Neves is still their head coach. We will not, fortunately, be seeing Mohamed Kamara or Keka this year. He had been going to Tyler Junior College and actually spent this past season at UCLA. He is the young man who terrorized us last year with his pace and intelligence. He is now off in Germany at SC Paderborn 07. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But we do wish him all the best. He actually was mentioned during the MLS Super Draft as potentially even a top five pick. So good luck to him. I hope he does very well, extremely far away from any pitch that Asheville City is on. Guys, last year, Atlanta SC, as the Silverbacks, failed to beat Asheville's men yet again. This is four regular season games that they have not been able to defeat us. At home, we were able to pull out a 3-1 win, and away, we beat them 1-0. Now, both of our two seasons, though, have ended against the Silverbacks, now Atlanta SC. In the playoffs, our first year, we actually lost to them 1-0 in a wonky playoff game that got moved into the middle of the day in that Atlanta Heat. And last year, again, our game got this one. It did start at 7. But it was actually held at a local high school, kind of closer to Alpharetta, again, and they defeated us 2-0, and so ended our season. And we look forward to seeing them, as always. Just to the south of them in Alpharetta, and a little bit to the east, we run into the Georgia Revolution, who this past season actually introduced a lower league women's team. It's not quite at the WPSL level. But after speaking to a few of their fans and their content creators in terms of podcasts, it does sound like they might eventually have that as a goal, but they continue just to do local leagues as of the moment. Their head coach going into this season is going to be Steven Magennis. He will be going into his first season. They just recently held some open tryouts also. They have a very, very functional website. It just isn't chocked full of information. Last year, guys, we played them home and away, obviously, and drew both times 1-1. That was actually our first two games of the season last year, and I think they were separated by maybe like 4 days. One of the I did some math during the offseason this year, and one of the things I found is that the 680-mile travel between New Orleans and Asheville is actually the longest travel distance in the NPSL between any two sides. Kenny Farrell comes back again as their manager. They are still continuing to play at Pan American Stadium. And Coach Farrell actually is now the new chairman of the NPSL that was voted on at the AGM this year. Excited for him. Excited to have Southern football again represented at that kind of board level. Guys, last year, New Orleans, we lost to them at home 1-3. It probably was one of our most comprehensive defeats. They really just played us off the pitch and deserved all three of those points. Now, away, however, we went down to their place at Pan America last game of the season, desperately needing some sort of result. If we had drawn with them, we would have needed some help. But we actually went down there and won 2-1. And for a long time, they had actually been pretty impossible to beat down at home. I think they actually went two or three seasons without losing a home game. Then had several defeats last year, but that was pretty impressive to go down there and in an absolute must win, eke out a game. I think the game had been decided by maybe 60 minutes or so, but it what an amazing way to end the season for us. And if we look just a little to the south, we find our neighbors Greenville FC, Carolina Classico competitors, who they themselves have introduced and welcomed some neighbors into their town. That's going to be held for a different conversation. Lee Squires returns as their coach. They actually have, as of this recording, on the 15th of February, they have their second open tryout tomorrow morning, and we'll hopefully find out a little bit more about their roster coming up. One of the things that they have done that was really exciting is they introduced the Greenville FC Academy, which will be offered at no charge to participants and their families. It's designed to make soccer more accessible to kids at a younger age, funded through partnerships and game day revenue. It's designed to increase access to fundamental trainings for local youth at a crucial stage in their development and allow for a new generation of talent to rise through the ranks. As the rumor has it, Greenville will not be playing their games at Furman next season. They have not announced a stadium or a, you know, they've kind of got that tri-city situation going on, and I don't even know which of the cities, but I do know the rumors are they will not be playing at Furman. One of their roster movements that I can very happily announce, much like Keka, Jesus Ibarra has signed with a team in Scandinavia. And I hope he's enjoying himself. And again, it is just not far enough away from Asheville. Good luck to him. And I know Jamie Smith will be excited not to have to see him this next upcoming season. Results-wise, also last season, they obviously beat us both home and away and captured the Carolina Classico trophy, which we look forward to bringing back this season. So potentially the club that had the most amount of changes that happened in the offseason was Chattanooga FC. Chattanooga, the landscape in that city, which is bigger than Asheville, probably about the size if you take all of Greenville and Spartanburg and kind of mash all of that together, it might be about that size. Everything just kind of fundamentally changed in that city in the soccer scene. The Chattanooga Red Wolves came to town, as you might remember from probably every podcast I've done since then. And their presence unto themselves has really elicited a lot of changes in Chattanooga FC. One of the first and foremost that directly impacts this upcoming season, Coach Elliott is going to actually serve as their general manager. Sheldon Grizzle has moved up to club president. And Peter Fuller, who was one of the most winningest coaches in NAIA history, is now going to serve as Coach Elliott's associate head coach. And if I'm not mistaken, when things go pro, I think there might be a little more shuffling there. Chattanooga FC renewed their lease at Finley after quite the drama with that, with the Red Wolves also. They have Finley now for 2 more years. They also announced participation in the Founders Cup, which is the NPSL's first foray into the professional ranks. 11 teams, again, we've mentioned on several of our podcasts, and we'll delve a little bit deeper into it as the season goes. They have not announced if they will have a reserve side going into 2020 or if they will just completely pull out of the NPSL, what's loosely being called NPSL Classic. If NPSL Pro does happen and has a March to November schedule as is anticipated, that's a little bit up in the air. The thing that Chattanooga did do that, again, blew back what little hair I have is that they announced fan shares. So if you don't know much about fan shares, think Green Bay Packers. It's basically stocks in a club. This is something that's extremely European. The Bundesliga in Germany actually has a 50+1 rule where no single individual, corporation, business, et cetera, can completely own a club. 50+1% has to be owned by the fans. However, that's broken down for each of those clubs. In England, obviously, this is very common. There's different ways to do it. There's clubs where teams fall on financial hardship and the club saves them. There's almost like hostile takeovers where owners drive a club into the ground and then the fans take over. There's also just Phoenix clubs where clubs, famously this happened when the American owners, the Glazers, who own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, bought Manchester United, and many of their fans actually kind of revolted against them and started their own club. But this is the first club or sporting team in America that has taken advantage of a 2016 change in crowdfunding laws, and they have opened 8,000 available shares at $125 a piece. They don't currently have a secondary market to sell these on, but they theoretically, as they sell out, they will become more valuable. In the first 2 hours that after this had been announced, the club raised $122,750 from 347 investors in 2 hours. As of this morning, when I looked, they have currently raised $548,125 from 1,970 investors. These investors are legitimately coming from all over the world, and I think 46 out of the 50 states. In their announcement, Chattanooga said, "Our ambition, our goal, has always been to establish a community-based club that will be around for 100 years, like soccer clubs around the world. With the experience gained over the last 10 seasons, we've established our place in the landscape of American soccer and are ready to move to the next level. We are adding professional players next year and playing a longer season in a new league we're helping launch. This is something we've been working on for years, and we are thrilled to finally see it happen." The response to this has been phenomenal. Clubs that are even direct rivals of Chattanooga, such as Detroit City, some of their fans have bought in. I know several of the other NPSL sides kind of down here in the Southeast have also bought shares. I truly believe if you guys want to look a little more into this, you can find WeFunder.com and look up their Chattanooga links and you'll be able to find this. I truly do think this sort of investment, you are investing into the club, specifically Chattanooga Football Club, but this, you're kind of doing something bigger. You are literally investing into the concept of fan shares. You are investing into the idea of everything CFC stands for, which is the antithesis to everything Chattanooga Red Wolves stand for, that kind of corporate monopoly, franchise fees and everything that really kind of comes along with that boat shoe sort of machinations of the USL. So if it's something you guys are interested in, feel free to reach out to me at @your_smarter and maybe I can help you find out how to purchase those. So guys, that was kind of the landscape up to this point of the NPSL Southeast. Let me real quick before we delve into Asheville City's kind of off-season happenings, kind of describe to you where last season ended off. If you guys remember, Chattanooga won our division with 28 points. The Silverbacks were second with 24, New Orleans 23, Inter Nashville with 20. Asheville and Georgia Revolution both had 18 points, but we had the better goal differential. Greenville and Emerald Force had 15 and 12, respectively, and missed out on the playoffs. Asheville went to Nashville and won 3-1. Georgia Revolution actually went down to New Orleans and upset New Orleans. Asheville went to Atlanta and lost 2-0, and so ended our season. Chattanooga proceeded to beat Georgia Revolution, and in the end, Atlanta Silverbacks beat Chattanooga on PKs with kind of some controversy over two PKs that the Chattanooga goalkeeper got called. Atlanta was allowed to re-kick them after Chattanooga's goalkeeper was claimed to have come off his line a little early. Atlanta went on to play Miami FC in the South region, and they lost. And Miami actually ended up going on to win the entire NPSL last year. So that kind of wraps up the 2018 season for everybody but Asheville City. This past offseason, Asheville has renewed their Highwire sponsorship for another 2 years. Very importantly, Asheville City also announced the AC Academy. In their announcement, they said this is in an effort to address the barriers to entry that exist in U.S. soccer's pay-to-play system. They had me right there. The AC Academy will be offered at no charge to youth or their families. Full funding for this program will be provided through a combination of club partnerships and the sale of alcohol wristbands at Asheville City first team home games at Memorial Stadium. So don't be surprised, guys, if you have to pay a couple dollars for your wristband. This is what it's going to. Not only will this broaden access to high-level soccer programming locally, it will also allow our supporters to contribute directly to the development of the next generation of homegrown talent. Guys, when I spoke to Ryan and talked to him about the Just Play initiative and this idea of thinking globally but acting locally, he obviously already had this in his back pocket, did not tell me about it, and I just could not be more thrilled with it. This is exactly the sort of snake eating its own tail of Asheville inspiring the next generation and eventually that generation coming in and playing for Asheville and then going on and inspiring another generation who Asheville can then train, who will eventually play for Asheville and move on. If Asheville can function in that as sort of a creator of talent, the sky's truly, truly the limit. The announcement continued to go on that a foundational component of the AC Academy programming will be immersive experiences within the entire club. Guys, what this means is Asheville is literally going to take 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds who may be at a phase in their career where they're in between high school and college, or they're in college but not playing much, but the talent is still there, but you're paying a lot of different masters kind of in the current system. And Asheville can take these players in and curate their talent, have first team players help coach them, help have our coaches help coach them, teach them different things in terms of training and nutrition and fitness. Academy players will be encouraged to be active in the communities, especially the local soccer community that has helped foster their development, including the Just Play initiative. This was where I throw myself on my own sword here. And when the club released that statement after that awful night in Trinidad and Tobago, and I kind of thought it was a little self-righteous, I had no idea this is what this club was capable of. And I could not be more proud to have been wrong and to support a group of men and women who that look at their role in the soccer culture in this area in this way. So another update I want to kind of throw out there is the Memorial Stadium renovation update. And I have down on here on my notes just a series of dots because there are no updates. If you guys remember, we've talked a few times to Ryan. I think I mentioned it to Megan that there is a $5 million bond out there to renovate Memorial. I'm pretty sure the plan is basically to completely tear it down and then build it from the ground back up. Alfred Benech and Company has been hired to do the architecture and some of the planning for this. They've done stuff, if any of you are familiar with different high schools in and around Charlotte, they've done things at Garinger, West Mech, and Olympic High. They also basically redid all of ECU's Olympic complex. A sub-consultant is Equinox, and they actually did some of the hydro planning at New Belgium. And if there's one thing Memorial Stadium could absolutely use, it's a little bit of hydro planning. At the present moment, there, if you look at the mock-up of what they have online, there's different components. There's a miracle field, there's a field house, park pavilion, restrooms. There is unfortunately a track around the field, which I hope maybe eventually through planning they can do away with. The field and grandstands, there's an adaptive playground and court sports. It connects to the trail that kind of runs behind Memorial. There's improved visitor access and innovative stormwater control measures. Again, hydro planning definitely needing. And the parking and infrastructure has been improved also there. The calendar for this renovation, though, is already pretty significantly behind. In September of this past year, 2018, they were actually supposed to have a public input session that, as far as I can tell, never happened. In November, December, January, and February, they're actually going to finalize the master plan. Again, I can't find any of that. And then in March, they were supposed to have a second public input session, and I have not heard from any about that. The plan is for construction to last about 15 to 18 months, and it was supposed to start at basically the end of this year, I think maybe in November, which would have put the grand opening, maybe at the beginning of the 2021 NPSL season. If this has already been pushed back this far, my fear is that both the 2020 and the 2021 seasons could be lost at Memorial. From what I've been told by the team, they're just going to cross those bridges when they get there. They don't have any definitive plans. If I had to forecast a guess, I don't necessarily know that any of our local high schools could support the fan base of Asheville City, nor do any of them provide alcohol, which I think is a key component to enjoying yourself at an Asheville City game. And I think much of the fan base would agree with that. That leaves UNCA. UNCA might be able to arrange a situation where temporary stands are brought in. They definitely do have the space for it. Parking would be a little tricky. There would probably be a beer jail, much like in Furman when we played Greenville last year. Again, none of this is written in stone, but it will directly impact the team. And the further that it gets pushed back, I do think it takes some of the ambition that the club would like to pursue. Again, they have not told me anything along those lines. I'm just kind of reading the tea leaves. I think it kind of takes and pauses some of that ambition, which I personally find extremely frustrating. Guys, if you would like to reach out to the city and kind of politely ask that they pick this process back up or at least update us, Christy Bass is actually the program manager over this. Her email is cbass@ashevillenc.gov, or you could give her a call at 828-259-5801. Again, be polite. Maybe if a few of us give her a call and ask if she could give us an update, that could maybe make some things happen. So again, we haven't had any player announcements yet, but we do know that a few of our players are not coming back, and two of those because they signed professional contracts. Mr. Asheville Cameron Saul and Dominic Bolin have both signed with the Greenville Triumph. I am absolutely positive throughout the course of the season we will reach out and hear from Cameron. I hope we hear from Dominic. As they both know, they are always welcomed in Asheville. I'm excited that they're only 45 minutes, an hour south of us, and maybe they can creep up to an Asheville City game or two. And maybe I'll throw on, you know, a wig and a fake mustache and some dark sunglasses and head down to a USL game and support our guys. Again, we should be hearing more about the roster here soon. And when that roster news comes out, we'll break down kind of off seasons for those that are coming back. There was some movement, like Jamie Smith has left Limestone and transferred to NC State on the women's side. Brooke Bingham had an amazing college season, took UNC Chapel Hill to the championship game. So we'll kind of update a little bit more about that. But guys, I want to end this episode. I appreciate you listening to me ramble by myself for well over half an hour. And here at the end, I'm going to include a little conversation I had with Coach Mick. And guys, I'll be back soon. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. So I just got done at the men's open tryout, and I've got Coach Mick with me. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. What'd you see out there today?
There's a lot of hardworking guys, to say the least. You know, we couldn't ask more from our open trial this year. about 52 players that we had, capped it out plus a bunch. A lot of guys that are getting back into it that have been off just a bit, but they definitely worked hard, and there's some positive things for sure.
Awesome. And one of the things that we haven't really talked on the podcast yet, but we're going to mention is the AC Academy that was just announced. Yep. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how what you saw out there today might play a part in that?
Yeah, for sure. So we just had the announcement and we're extremely excited about it. And it's just another supplemental training and supplemental games for players in the 15 to 20 range, maybe 15 to 19, 16 to 19. And from all over Western North Carolina, Eastern Tennessee, Upstate South Carolina, just to continue the level of youth football and to continue to try and get more homegrown players into our system. And our model was really based off a lot of European clubs and a lot of professional clubs in terms of where we want to develop more homegrown players. We want to get these guys that are from this area, one, just because it would make things easier in terms of resources and we can put resources in other areas, but then as well, now you're really tying into the community, you're getting more fan base involved. And so for us, in the first year with the academy coming up, it'll be quote unquote like a U20s. And I think today showed, I think we had 10 to 12 guys that we know when we have our tryout for the academy later in April, that they're going to be at the very top of the list, and they've put a really good foot forward into that direction.
Awesome. So let's go down a checklist. When can we start expecting player announcements?
Hopefully, based on, you know, the owners are away right now with the women's winter meetings, but hopefully they'll be back here in the next 2 days. So we're hoping to get some of the returners and all of them out here in the next 2 weeks. That's a lofty goal, but that's a hope for sure that we can get them. And then hopefully as we go through February and March, we can get the rest of the men's roster released and the rest of who we have coming in for the summer.
All right. Any idea on a schedule?
Scheduling, that would be Mr. Ryan Kelly. But based on my conversations with him, it will be soon. It will be within the next 2 weeks as well. Hopefully everything goes well. As everyone's looked at the home tourist schedule, we all know that there's a lot of home baseball games, especially in May, and we're going around some of that. So Ryan's been really doing everything he can with the women's side and the men's side, trying to get home games on weekends, and I know he's working diligently on that. So hopefully, like I said, in the next 2 weeks.
All right. Any thoughts on Cameron Saul signing his first professional contract?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I'm delighted for him. You know, Coach Harks and I've talked a good bit about Cam, about 3-4 conversations about him from when he first sent a video and he first sent me his highlight video just to take a look, and then he had sent it to Coach Harks later on that night after we had chatted about it, and that was right before their open trial or their closed trial, their invite only trial on the Sunday. They had the open trial on the Saturday, and we got him into the Sunday, and you know, Cam does what Cam does, and he just went and performed really, really well. And so we're extremely happy for him. You know, as I've told him when I saw him today out here, that whatever he needs before preseason, please let us know. But we're going to make sure everyone knows out that he's an Asheville City guy still. He's still one of our boys. But we can't wait to go see him play and see him play in a professional, full-time professional environment.
Awesome. Maybe before the season starts, we do this again and talk a little bit more about what's coming up.
Yeah, for sure. Please, we can sit down, have a longer chat. I would love to. Anything. We can talk football. We can do that for hours. So
same here.
U.S. men's national team, whatever, Europe, Champions League, Asheville City, whatever you want to. I'm
awesome.
On board.
So well, thanks so much, Coach. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you again.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with Bruce. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards, scoring some sunners.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network. Check us out on social media at your_smarter or shoot us an email at your_smarter_than_us@gmail.com.